from Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two guys fumbling their way through the music business so you don't have to. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino and the Music Row Show.
Look at all those nice people out there.
Hello, everybody.
Waving. Hello, friends. Welcome to the Music Row Show. My name is Scott.
And my name is Hino. Thanks again for tuning in tonight. This show is for all you songwriters and musicians and knuckleheads like Scott over here who are just trying to figure stuff out here in Music City.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Knucklehead. Hey, we don't have any answers. We're out there slinging songs during the day just like y'all are. But what we are able to do is bring brilliant, talented people into the studio.
That is
true. Pick their brains and give you the opportunity to join the conversation as well.
And you know how you do that. You go to facebook.com/TheMusicRowShow. You can chime in with your questions and comments there, or you can hit us up on Twitter, @TheMusicRowShow.
Right.
Just like that.
And I'm actually on it now.
Look at you.
I know. I'm very excited.
Joining the modern age.
I know. So, hey, you've heard us talking about the 31st Annual Frank Brown International Songwriters Festival coming up in just a few weeks. So we decided to give you a preview of some of the awesome writers that you're going to see there.
Yeah, absolutely. And first up is multiple hit songwriter Bobby Keel here in hour number one.
Yes. And then we're going to be talking with hit songwriter and recording artist Bruce Chanel. He's going to be live in studio with us in hour two.
Sweet. All right, Scott, why don't you tell us who this fine gentleman is here sitting with us?
Let me tell you something about Bobby. Bobby is one of these guys. He doesn't need an intro.
Okay.
Because he has numbers.
Yeah, what are they?
14 gold records, 12 platinum records, and counting. Currently has a number one song in Europe.
Really?
Songs recorded by Hank Jr., Travis Tritt, Confederate Railroad, Tammy Wynette, Merle Haggard, Willie Nelson, David Allen Coe, Mo Bandy, and I'm very excited about this one. Not that those aren't excitable too, but Albert King.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Absolutely.
That's cool.
That will really get you. Get your heart thumping right there.
Wakes you up in the morning. He is a longtime participant of the Frank Brown International Songwriters Festival, which starts up on the 6th. On the 5th is the kickoff.
Mm-hmm.
5th through the
15th.
15th.
Yeah.
A 2-week festival in beautiful Perdido Key, Orange Beach, Alabama.
Gulf Shores.
Pensacola.
That whole area.
Whole area.
Yeah.
But he's part of the three B's. He takes the stage with Tom Bresch and Ed Beaver, and that is a dangerous combination. We thought about bringing them all in here, but the fire marshal said we couldn't do that.
They were not allowed to have that much awesomeness in one room
right,
at the same
right,
time.
Right, right. So we're real happy to have Bobby in here. It's a pleasure to say, Bobby Keel, welcome to the Music Row Show, Frank Brown's International Songwriters Fest preview show. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Glad to be here, absolutely.
Somebody gets got some oxygen.
I'm telling you what, you know, I'm beginning to try to figure out who that fella is you're talking about.
It's all you.
Sounds kind of strange when you hear it back at you, you know.
So you're a great guitar player. And I'm just curious, do you remember when you got your first guitar and who taught you to play?
I got my first guitar when I was about 12.
Okay.
And I'd been playing piano since I was 3.
Really?
Oh, okay.
And, but there were some folks that moved out of the land between the lakes when the government bought all the land, and they moved out the road from where I lived, where I grew up. And so I was getting with them, you know, and neighbors. But Mr. Hargrove, he was a thumb picker, much in the Travis style, which, of course, working with Tom Bresch, I've always played that style. But, you know, of course, Tom is just over the top. He's a modern-day Mozart, if there ever was one.
Well, he had inside information with how to play Merle Travis stuff.
Pardon me?
Tom Bresch had inside information.
Oh, yeah. He knew a guy that knew a guy that had a brother-in-law with an uncle on the inside of four gray walls.
Something like that.
Wow.
Oh, Tom's incredible. I treasure every moment I get to pick with him.
That's great.
It's a learning experience.
So you basically just learned from a bunch of folks just who happened to be around you at the time.
Sure. You know, a musical melting pot, if you will.
Yeah.
You know, just it's not something I decided I wanted to do. It's like the rest of us, you know. It's something in you that's just got to come out, as Kilgore would say. You know?
Right.
Merle would, son, it's in you and it's got to come out, you know. Merle was something else, too.
Well, what, so... So you started playing then at 12, mm-hmm. but how far along? You said you've been playing piano since 3, but how deep were you in piano? Were you just kind of doing what you had to do for your lessons?
You know, I was playing the melody lines. My sister Mary Ann, 6 years older than I am, well, she was taking piano lessons. So she would get down off the bench or get up from the bench, and I'd climb up on it and play the melody line to what she had been playing. Well, when I started the first grade, the piano teacher my sister was taking from, she realized I had an ear, mm-hmm. and so she taught me the bass lines instead of, you know, the Red John Thompson book that we all learn out of. I kind of picked up a little theory out of that, but I played Last Date at my first recital.
Really?
In the first grade, yeah.
Was that the Floyd Kramer?
The Floyd Kramer
tune?
Thing.
Yeah.
I didn't sound nearly as good as Floyd, but it was, you could tell what it was.
Nice.
Well, my mother knew what it was anyway. That's all that mattered.
Yeah. That's great. So, so you grew up in Dover?
Absolutely.
Dover, Tennessee.
Dover.
And it's really only about an hour and a half from Nashville.
Right.
Not too far.
Oh, it was easy.
Yeah, but was the mystique of Music City still there while you were growing up? Was the idea of Nashville, when you're growing up in Oregon or Oklahoma or something, Nashville is just like, oh my gosh. But when you're in Dover, is it quite as mysterious?
Well, I know one thing. It may not be that mysterious, but you didn't have to worry about starving to death because you could run home to mama every night and get something to eat.
You had somebody who could do your laundry.
But, you know, it had a mystique, I guess. But, you know, at the same time, I was 17 when I first came to town. And I didn't have enough sense to realize, you know. And, of course, this was in the late 60s, and you could go in, you know, doors would be standing open instead of having armed guards. In my first trip to town, I had 2 songs I had written, had them on a reel-to-reel, and I had 5 bags of crappie.
Okay.
I got me a writing deal the first day I was in town.
Yeah.
Now, were they cooked already?
Oh, no. It was bagged up fresh.
Right?
Just caught them the day or two before that.
And you were just handing them out like business cards or what?
Well, absolutely.
Awesome. You were a smart 17-year-old.
I was trying every angle I could get in.
That is brilliant.
The first door I knocked on was the Wilburn Brothers Surefire Music.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And so anyway, in fact, the door was, like I say, about half open. And I stuck my head in there, and the lady at the desk said, "Can I help you?" I said, "Well, yes, ma'am, I've got a couple of songs I've written, and I'd just like for somebody to listen to them." And she's real nice. She said, "Well, we're a closed publisher." Well, I didn't know what that was. And I asked, and she said, "Well, you know, we just have the writers that work for the show and what have you, and the guys." And I said, "Oh," she said, "well," I had the 2 songs. She said, "Do you have anything else?" She was talking about a song. But I said, "Well, I got some crappie." Well, then this voice in the back says, "Come on back, son."
That's great. I love that.
So he took a bag of crappie and sent me across the road to Moss Rose Publishing, which was owned by Hubert Long,
uh-huh.
in the old CSAC building upstairs. And they signed me to a little publishing deal. And,
when you were 17 years old.
Yeah.
Wow. And, so in addition to a song quota, did you also have like a fish quota?
Absolutely.
Did you have to bring your limit in every week?
I would bring fish. I mean, I lived right on the water there, basically.
Yeah.
You know, the lake was literally right behind the house. So
did either of those 2 songs get cut?
Yeah, one of them did. It was on a minor artist. I mean, you know, looking back, the songs obviously, the fish were better than the songs. But I did, and I did get one of them cut. The other one, I still remember both of them, you know. But
yeah.
Neither one of them were very successful, but it got me in the door. And then Hubert Long, who owned Moss Rose, passed right after I signed. And I signed with Mary John Wilkin.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Mary John's a great writer, legendary writer and publisher and... I mean, just a pioneer, buddy. She was a pioneer in this industry. She was the woman that was the queen of the walk, buddy. I mean, you know, she stood tooth and nail with all the big boys.
So back it up. Now, how long were you at your first publisher?
About a little less than a year because Hubert died, and then they split the company.
Okay,
they dissolved it.
And then Mara John just picked you up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow.
So then I hung out with there for a while and wrote some things and got a few things going. Then,
did she like crappie?
Do what?
Did she like crappie?
You know, I never did carry Mary John any crappie.
What?
And I don't know why. I really don't. It just, I guess I didn't think I needed to anymore. I don't know. But, no, she was an angel. I loved working for Mary John.
How was she as far as, because you were still a very young writer.
Yeah.
So what were these folks doing for you as far as helping?
They were giving me a place to grow.
Were they
giving me a room to grow? They were giving me a garden to grow in.
How are they helping you develop your craft?
You know, I think the way it was then, you know, and I guess it still is now, you know, you just meet people and you start writing with them, you know, and of course she had writers on staff there as well. And, you know, we just all intermingled and wrote together. And then I left Mary John, moved to Texas for a while, came back. And, you know, I'd created a network of friends and just some of my mentors that I wrote with, Don Wayne,
mm-hmm.
who wrote Country Bumpkin and Time to Pay the Fiddler, you know, all these great hits. And Bill Taylor, that wrote a lot of stuff for Jerry Lee. Those guys were a lot of my early mentors. And I wrote for First Lady Songs, Tammy's Company.
Okay. And, Tammy Wynette.
Yeah.
Now, is that how you got the...
Yes. Sir.
Was that cut during that time?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
And just blossomed from there. And then I got Hank Jr. cuts and co-cuts. And it was kind of a windfall there for a while, you know. And
so... I'm slowing you down because we got an hour and we want to talk about all this stuff. But when you're talking about the mentors, were they telling you things or giving you advice, or were you just learning from hanging out with them?
Osmosis.
Yeah.
You know, a little of both. Bill Taylor always accused me of being a melody man. And it used to kill me when he'd say, well, I write words, too. You know?
So you didn't like that?
Oh, you know, when you're 20-something years old, you want to think you do both things.
You do everything, yeah.
And I guess I was. But he would always say, sit down at the piano, just play this, because he loved, you know, the piano. And I'd sit down at the piano and we'd start, and he'd say, that's it right there, you know. But, I fit in, I suppose, you know, just even at a young age, and just kept with it and just met so many young writers that we developed together with. Billy Stone, Billy's gone now, bless his heart, but I sure loved writing with Billy, and Rodriguez and all that bunch. I don't, you know, a lot of the 80s I don't really remember because it was so long ago.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's the reason why.
That's the reason why. All right. Well, in order to help you refresh your memory, we're going to take a little quick break here, but we're going to come back with a whole lot more of Bobby Keel on our Frank Brown Songwriting Festival Preview Hour. But before we go, we want to remind you that our segment here is brought to you by our friends over at Toyota of Cool Springs.
Yes, it is. I know.
Yes, it is. Blah, 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 blah.
Maybe they'll loan us a car to go to Florida in.
There you go. Look, we love Toyota of Cool Springs. We both drive Toyotas, and we're excited because they do so many cool things for the clients as far as warranties and three-day return policy and just making everything such an excellent experience. And now they've gone. And
they've done it now.
They've done it now. Yeah. They went and bought the Jeep Dodge
Chrysler
dealership there
Ram
in Franklin
dealership.
Too.
Yep, yep.
So we're very excited about that. Yes, I drive Toyotas, but you know, what did I drive for years and years?
A Jeep. That's
I'm
right.
a Jeep guy. I
that's
love
right.
Jeeps. So I'm just really excited because that means that all those folks that want those kind of cars are going to get the same kind of great service and deals and special little things they do for their customers.
Well, George is the owner over at Toyota of Cool Springs. Go ask for him when you walk in the door there, and you can find him on the web at toyotaofcoolsprings.com. We are here with Bobby Keel, great songwriter, on our Frank Brown Songwriters Festival Preview Hour. We will be back in just a few minutes.
Milwaukee's Danville Blue. I kept the bucket of shiners and the crawlers in a can, eagerly awaiting conversation man to man. By the time I turned 10, I'd learned a valuable lesson. When the going gets tough, tough go fishing.
Yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We are here with hit songwriter Bobby Keel, and that's a tune of his, Going Gets Tough.
The tough go fishing.
As he knows from personal experience.
When you want a big deal from a publishing shoppie, take a big bag of just caught crappie. Yeah.
There you go.
No.
Wow.
That's the best story I've heard in nine years.
That's a great
being
story.
Being on the radio. I love it.
Oh, man. So, the advice that you got when you came to town and you know, as you were working your way through things and writing with all these writers, how do you think that differs from the advice that would be appropriate for a writer today coming into town now?
I don't know, but I do know a hit song don't care who sings it or when it's sung. So if you keep that in mind, you know, there's always going to be trends. You know, I remember, you know, back in the late 70s when Kenny Rogers started popping, and I love Kenny Rogers, but everybody said, oh, country's gone pop, you know. When heck, when
Shania, when, country's gone pop. Everybody
well,
was.
You can go back before that, and when Chet started putting strings on things, you know.
Oh, those strings.
Oh,
it was the end of the world,
you know,
right there.
It's all good. It's, you know, it's an evolution.
Yeah.
I think the same advice applies at all time because it's the same craft.
Okay.
You know, people look at songwriting. You know, there's a lot of magic, if you will, but it's a craft, just like being a pipe fitter or a carpenter or whatever. You've got to know your basic rules to apply. You know, you got to be able to build a foundation. You got to put the walls up and put a roof on it.
Yep.
And just whatever you want to build, you can, but you still got to adhere to the tenets of it. And that's advice I'd give anybody. You know, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah.
Kiss method.
There you go.
Never say anything in a song that you can't say in a conversation. And I always try to write my last verse first.
Really?
That way I know where I'm going with my song. You know, if you determine your destination, you don't have to worry about having 300-second verses wondering how to finish the song.
Okay, I've never heard that
ding,
either.
Ding, ding, ding,
I know.
Ding, ding.
We got light bulbs going off.
$24.95, not including the video.
So how did you come up with that? Somebody along the way say, "Hey, you should do it this way," or how did you come up with that little nugget right there?
I'm sure. Yeah.
Remember, he doesn't remember the '80s.
Okay. Right. Sorry,
we already discussed it. It was a long time ago.
A long time ago. Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Well, but, I'd like to talk about a song that I love, and that's Whiskey on Ice. It's just a killer song, and Hank did it. You wrote that with Tony Stampley and with Junior, with Hank Junior. So let us be a fly on the wall at that writing session for a few minutes. What was that?
It started out, I was working on a song for Joe Stampley, Tony's dad, and it was Warm Women and Cold Beer. Lord knows I love warm women, and he knows I love cold beer, the honky-tonk things. Well, I was kind of rolling that in my head, and I was about out of gas. So I had $3, so I pulled in to get some gas at the Shell station. And it was in the fall, and there was a big sign out there that said, "Get fire and ice protection for your car." They were hawking antifreeze.
Right.
But for some reason or another, it went from warm women and cold beer to whiskey on ice and women on fire.
I love it.
So I got with Tony, you know, I fiddled with him and got with him, I guess, maybe the next day. And just a couple of days later, Hank cut it. You know, he did some changes on it. And I might add, you know, a lot of people say things, but every change he made tremendously helped the song, you know.
Well, and it's surprising to me that you guys had it mostly written because the song sounds like his life story. It's so autobiographical.
Well, you kind of got to get inside the suit if you're going to wear it.
So when you and Tony were sitting down, were you thanking Hank Jr. for
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We wrote three songs in about 2 days there, and he cut all three of them. One of them was I've Been Down, which is a blues song, and the other one was called Woman on the Run. And absolutely. We were channeling Hank as hard as we could.
It's Chanel-ing. Hank, we have to pronounce channel Chanel while this
number
evening.
Number one.
That's right.
Well, you know what? We'd love to hear you play a tune. You feel like
Absolutely.
Playing something for us?
Sure. What would you like to hear?
Anything you feel anything, like playing. Yeah. Actually, play Whiskey on Ice, would you?
Okay.
Yeah, play anything you want as long as it's Whiskey on Ice.
Right.
See how easy we make
just
it.
Don't give
people.
Me any piano music. I got a guitar.
Okay, okay, no problem. This tuning is brought to you by LR Bags Pickups.
Woke up this morning, I was tasting Jim Beam, holding the answer, some old boy's dream. I got a bad reputation, reckon I'm a live wire, like my whiskey on ice and my women on fire. From Memphis to Mobile, I have played all the dives. Lord knows I'm lucky just to still be alive. Hey, I'm an all-around rebel, and I will not be denied my whiskey on ice and my women on fire. Like my whiskey on ice and my women on fire. A good-sounding guitar won't be called a liar. I spent many long nights with the burning desire for my whiskey on ice and my women on fire. Now folks talk about me, reckon they always will. Think it's been an easy ride, say I've had it downhill. But what they don't think about, what they don't realize, is the shoes that I'm a-filling. Well, they're a mighty big size. And now one night in Nashville, tried to take my own life. My best friends done left me, Lord, and so had my wife. But a fast ride to Florida made me realize I had some whiskey on ice and some Florida honeys on fire. Hey, I like my whiskey on ice and my women on fire. A good sounding guitar won't be called a liar. I may grow old, but I will never grow tired of my whiskey on ice and my women on fire. I like my whiskey on ice and my women on fire.
Yeah.
All right.
Woo.
Man, oh man, oh man. So I'm just curious, you've written so many great songs. Have you ever been surprised by how differently an artist has interpreted one of your songs versus how you envisioned it when you wrote it?
I eagerly await to hear their interpretations, and they all sound good when they're selling. They do, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I've never been disappointed.
Okay.
I really haven't. I'm just thankful to be part of the process and, you know, be a part of this wonderful life that we have.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's so many things in the world that can go wrong if we can skip through life for, you know, 60, 70 years and be relatively healthy and got some of our capabilities or sensibilities about us. I think it's a wonderful thing. And if we can share it musically or lyrically with everyone else, make somebody smile every day. It doesn't matter what you do. If you can just make one person smile every day, then you've done a great thing.
There you go. So along the lines of his question, Hino's question, how strange is it? What struck me when I, okay, so I heard Hank's version of Whiskey on Ice, mm-hmm. and it's like, man, that's his life. That is his life right there. And then Confederate Railroad covers it and Travis Tritt covers it.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, how strange was that to have other people cover something that was so Hank Jr.?
It is pretty neat.
Yeah.
It's pretty ballsy, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, thinking the exact same thing.
I did the definitive version of
basketball?
It. But, you know, Travis Tritt sang it.
He sang the fire out of it.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And Tony Stampley, you know, of course, he's a co-writer. But Tony's such a great singer.
Yeah.
You know why he never had a bigger deal is beyond me? Because he is an absolute superstar.
Yeah. Yeah, great writer, too.
Oh, he's a great writer. Taught him everything I know.
Yeah, and you know what? Good for him. That
good
you know,
yeah,
he's so lucky that he had that opportunity to,
oh, well,
to be
I was
with
lucky
you.
To be able to write with him as well, you know. I'm not going to get lightning struck, I hope.
And I hope not, too, because I'm right next to you.
Yeah, I'm going to have to step aside here.
So what about Albert King's You Got It? Because that's
pretty cool.
I got to say, that's just a cool cut. And I've heard that song for years. I love that song. How does that happen? And how do you even get songs to blues artists nowadays? Was it a full on demo or was it just a guitar vocal?
No, you know what's really, I guess it was in '84. I wrote a song that was the theme song for the Memphis in May Festival.
Okay.
And while I was down there, I met this lady named Sandy Carroll, who's a blues artist down there and a singer.
Mm-hmm.
And we wrote one weekend, and we wrote two songs. That was one of them. And then, you know, 4 or 5 years pass, and I don't think anything about it. I haven't heard anything from her. And then one of my friends said, "Hey, man," he said, "have you heard Albert King's version of your song, If You Got It?" And I said, "Well, no, you know." So then I did get to hear it, and it just blew me away. You know, Jim Dickinson, you might remember him. He was a great keyboard player and producer mm-hmm. in Memphis. He produced it on Albert. It was his last studio album, and I'm wedged right between our songs. Wedged right between James Taylor and Jimi Hendrix.
Wow!
So that's pretty neat in itself, right there.
No kidding. You know?
But Albert King, you know, it's just. You don't get any more bluesy than that, I guess, unless you dig Robert Johnson up.
So you really don't even know how it got to him?
Sandy Carroll pitched it to Jim Dickinson.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I went the long way around the
That's
barn.
Okay. That's okay.
But it was written as a blues tune.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
It was just like...
Yeah, give us a little here.
If you got it, I can get it, then I can get it all night long. If you got it, I can get it, I can get it for it's on.
That's it. That's it.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
I love blues. I just love blues. I listened to Eric Clapton last night on NPT.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 70 years old.
Is he really? Wow.
But that's young.
Yeah, it is.
That's young. That's just a young fella.
Yeah.
He didn't look a day over 65. You know? I tell you what, you know, we've had so many great influences.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I had a fella tell me that, in fact, a great guitarist himself, Ed King. I don't know if y'all are familiar with Ed.
Mm-mm.
Ed King was lead guitarist for Lynyrd Skynyrd. And he wrote, among other things for Skynyrd, he and Ronnie wrote Sweet Home Alabama.
Okay.
And
okay.
Ed and I were doing some writing, and we were talking one day, speaking of, people influencing you. And I said something about, what was the first record you ever bought? He said, "Bobby, I mowed 3 yards and went down to the record store, and I bought Hey Baby by Bruce Chanel."
No kidding.
All right.
He did, and he said, Delbert McClinton was playing harmonica on
that
thing.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He said, I said, "We need to meet that fella." He said, "Oh, no, I can't meet him." So we called our buddy, and I guess y'all made pretty good pals, didn't you? Ed's great. Ed's, you know, he had to have a heart transplant and all that stuff. Yeah. But, now see, that's a Southern California. Ed was from the South. Only he was from Southern California.
I gotcha.
He hooked up with Skynyrd. The Who came to America, and they were doing a tour, and he had a band called Strawberry Alarm Clock.
another great name.
I remember those guys.
So anyway, he left Strawberry Alarm Clock and went to writing for Skynyrd. But yeah, we're all influenced by it. You know, you never know who your influences are. And to an extent, I guess it's not a fact that I take it for granted or other writers take it for granted. But, you know, we write something and we hear it, or we get a check and it sold so many records. But, you know, you run into somebody that lives in Burlington, Vermont or somewhere. Hey, man, I know your song. I love your song. Or when somebody says, you know, that song really had an impact on my life, you know. Mm-hmm. And I hope it's always been a positive, you know, positive impact.
True, yeah. True.
You know, I mean, I wrote, you know, I think every songwriter should write a song about their mother, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
you realize my mom listens every week, so now I'm going to get a call.
She's nodding her head right now.
I'm going to get a call saying,
you better believe it.
Yeah. What's taking you?
I wrote a song about my mama, and when I wrote it and played it to her.
She disowned you?
She said, son, I love you. You're my baby boy, but I'm just not sure if that'll work. I said, but mama. She said, I love you, but I just don't think that's going to do anything. But then anyway, my friends Mo Bandy and Joe Stampley recorded it, and a bunch of other people have been playing it around for years and doing it. But it's about Mama smoking her first joint.
Oh, yeah. Oh, let's make this a cliffhanger, because we need to take a break.
All right.
And when we come back, you're going to sing a song about Mama smoking her first joint.
Absolutely.
All right.
Oh,
all right.
My goodness. We're
right here
with,
live in the studio.
We're doing our annual Frank Brown Songwriting Festival preview.
And Bobby's going to be here.
And Bobby's going to be at the festival. And luckily for us, he's with us right now. And he's going to be back with us when we come back in just a few minutes here on the Music Row Show.
Went to sleep and I woke up, it was 100 years ago. I could smell coffee brewing, I couldn't find my Cheerios. Mind has a way of doing the strangest things they say. I reached for my Levi's and I found Confederate Gray.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Bobby Keel, and that's a tune of his called Fresh Horses.
That sounds like a CSN song right there. A little Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I like it.
Well, we, you know, as long as we're, you got that guitar on, you want to play us another tune for us?
Well, we had the cliffhanger.
Oh, the cliffhanger. I forgot all about that. Yeah.
Dum, dum, dum.
Well, it's that
note. Now, that's a chord right there. So when we last left our story, he wrote a song about his mama, and his mama said, "Now that ain't going to work."
Mama said that song, son, I love you and you're my baby, but I just don't know. However, after Mo and Joe cut it and I got a little old check in, and it paid off a note that she had co-signed at the bank, it became her favorite song. But you got to pay attention to the lyrics, but it's about mama burning a joint, and it goes like this here. If mama is a God-fearing woman, why she never do a bad deed in her life? A kind and caring mother to us children, and a daddy, well, she's a trusting, loving wife. But she gave in to temptation, and to my daddy's aggravation, she smoked her first joint, she did it right. Mama burnt down my daddy's honky-tonk last night. Yeah, she cried hallelujah. Know you had it coming to you. Now you could smell that smoke for miles around. And according to the parson, it was not a case of arson. She smoked her first joint, she did it right. Mama burnt down daddy's honky-tonk last night. Thank you. Now folks gonna talk for days about how it happened. Heck, the paper done made her the front page news. And to the local ladies, why, she's a hero. To the men folks, she's a witch who lit the fuse. My mama said that she had had it, a burnout on my daddy's habits. She smoked her first joint, she did it right, my mama burnt down daddy's honky-tonk last night. And she cried hallelujah, you know you had it coming to you. Yeah, you could smell that smoke for miles around. And according to Jim Baker, she did it for her maker. Yeah, she smoked her first joint, she did it right. My mama burnt down daddy's honky-tonk last night. I never seen my daddy cry, or my mama quite as high as when she burnt down my daddy's honky-tonk last night. Burn another, mama.
Listen, if you are having as much fun as we are, you need to make plans to go down to Perdido Key, Orange Beach, Alabama, and take part in the Frank Brown International Songwriters Festival. It's coming up here November 5th through the 15th.
That's right.
Every single night for 2 weeks, there's music.
There's over 200 songwriters going to be participating.
It's crazy, yeah.
And you can find out all the information at frankbrownsongwriters.com. That's where you go on the web.
That's right. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back with one more segment here with the great Bobby Keel. Stick around. We'll be right back on the Music Row Show.
Woo.
Thank God it's almost over, all those lonely nights alone.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show.
It used to be.
We're doing our annual Frank Brown Songwriters Festival preview show, and helping us out with that is the great Bobby Keel, great songwriter. He's also going to be down at the festival, which is the 5th through the 15th this coming November.
And what were we just listening to?
That was Asphalt Ribbon.
Asphalt Ribbon. That's a beautiful song. So before we get one more song out of you, you've been at a bunch of Frank Brown International Songwriters Festivals. What makes this festival and the area in general so special for songwriters, in your opinion?
Because they make the songwriters feel so special.
They really do, don't they?
They really do.
Yep.
I tell you what, it's such a wonderful team down there, Pat McClellan and Joe Gilchrist, mm-hmm. Linda Ponder and Lori and all of them. They really, really do. They go well and above and beyond the call of duty to see that everybody is just having a good time.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
As the years have passed, it's like a family reunion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there's people. Bruce and I live on one side of Nashville, he lives the other. But we come more near seeing each other at the festival than we do.
Yeah.
But and that's so true. But I look forward to it every year. And each year I look forward to it even more.
That's great. Well, you wanted to play us one more song. What are you going to play us?
I'm going to play a song called As Beautiful As You.
Okay.
And like I said earlier, I love to go to museums. I love art. I cannot draw a picture. I'm not like Alan Rodier or Wood Newton or some of these guys, but I come up with this little ditty right here. In fact, it's the first time I've ever played it out on like radio or anything.
All right,
like
sweet.
I've seen Van Gogh's, Picasso's, Monet's and Surratt's. Fixed a gaze on crows and cubes. Thus seen and seen some dots. I know there's no master's palette that can conjure up a hue to ever paint a picture that's as beautiful as you.
You're not one in a million. You're one of a kind. A picture-perfect portrait for my frame of mind. No way the greatest masterpiece is hanging in the Louvre. 'Cause even Mona Lisa is not as beautiful as you. Botticelli angel, have to hide her face, or she just fly far away and drift out into space. And Mr. Michelangelo, oh, and we all know what he could do. Could never paint a picture that's as beautiful as you. For you're not one in a million. You're one of a kind. A picture-perfect portrait for my frame of mind. No way the greatest masterpiece is hanging in the loop. Even Mona Lisa is not as beautiful as you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Woo. Thank you.
Oh, man, that was awesome.
Marcia is going to be really mad that you didn't debut it on her show and you did it on ours. Uh-huh. We love you, Marcia.
Hey, listen, you know what? Our Frank Brown preview festival, Frank Brown Festival preview hour, I should say, is going to continue in the next hour. We got Bruce Chanel going to be joining us. Thank you to Bobby Keel for hanging out with us
hour.
And playing
Thank
us
you.
Some great
Thank
tunes.
Thank y'all. Thank y'all very much.
Man, we will see you back in a few minutes here on the Music Row Show.